Parenting's hard, you don't know what to do. You're blaming your kids, but it's probably you. You love your kids and that you can trust. Just remember your kids don't suck.
Welcome to Your Kids Don't Suck, cultivating closeness with your children through non-coercive conscious parenting. We're your hosts, Kara Tedstone and Rathia Lee. Let's dive in and grow together.
Okay, welcome back, everybody, to Your Kids Don't Suck. Rathia and I are back together after what seems like a very long time. And we're back, and we're going to talk today about the payoff of non-coercion, even though we spend a lot of our time, and me personally spending a lot of my time in my head thinking about the challenges of it. Today, we're going to talk about the benefits that we can see and the payoffs and the rewards.
Right. Like, why do we do it? Why did we even make this whole podcast?
Yeah.
Why is it important to break down authoritarianism with our children and in our dynamic with our families? Why work that hard? Huh. It's similar to saying, why work on anti-oppression work? Obviously, it's deeply rewarding and we get so much from it. So we wanted to talk explicitly about what do we get from it? Why are we doing it? Why are we so passionate about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you've told our stories about how we got into it already. And I think I want to make sure that I also don't get into like a whole nature versus nurture thing, meaning I don't want to attribute my kids' qualities to my parenting because I know that she's only two and it's going to change. And what I'm really focusing on personally, like in this process, is that I guess I hold in my mind, like what I'm trying to do, the goal of all of this is to uncover who she really is, not to try to continuously be like, oh, non-coercion is making her this way, because I want to make sure that whatever way she is, I'm good with it. Like I'm embracing it and I'm guiding her without that shame that we always talk about. So when I talk about the things that I'm noticing, I'm going to try to make it more about me. Is what I'm trying to say, that it's not about like how I'm making her into who she's becoming.
You are amazing. That is a perfect place to start. It reminds me of when you homeschool your child, people always go, well, what's your kid up to? And they want you to prove why it's okay that you homeschool. You're like, well, she's joined this club and she's taking college classes and da da da. And then people go, oh, and then it's okay that you're homeschooling.
Yeah.
And we don't want to do that with this lifestyle either. Say, well, my child's so successful. So clearly non-coercion is working. It reminds me of, my TikToks, I did a whole TikTok on how clean my daughter's room was and how it had nothing to do with me. She just decided to clean it. And I remember when she watched the video, she goes, Mom, they're going to think that you like me better if my room is clean.
That's it. That's it. That is really it. It's almost like I was hesitant to like write down. My husband and I were talking about like, what are the things we're seeing? And they were all about her behavior. And I was like, that's not the point. I just wanted to make it clear even to myself, like when I was writing these notes, I was like, the point is not what she's up to and what she is doing, what she isn't doing. The point is how I feel I've been showing up, or I've been striving, because I don't always do it, but I've been striving to show up non-judgmentally and accepting of her. But it's hard in the toddler years, especially because a lot of it feels like you're trying to behavior manage. So I just want to emphasize that like this is about my mindset and what the mindset does for me as her parent, and not a reflection of like how awesome I think my kid is or how good she's doing or otherwise.
That's so great. Thank you for starting us off like that. That's brilliant. Yes, because the end of that story I just told is now her room is not like that anymore.
Like it's messy again?
Yeah, it's messy again. It's like, yep, and it'll go in and out. And the point is not that she's a good performing people pleaser. That's not the goal, even though it's most parents' goal, because they just want to feel good about themselves. They just want to feel that their child is reflecting that they're okay and they've done an okay job. And that's why we get so attached to how competent, and successful our children are in the world and in themselves. And that's a trap. That's a terrible trap. Mm-hmm. It really is, because unconditional love means you love your child in any phase of their development, and when they're failing, when they're falling apart, when they hate themselves, when they're you know, losing friends, when they're getting into scary behavior. I mean, the whole idea is that we learn how to show up for all of it. And that's hard. That's hard because we didn't get it. Most people never had that. We don't inherently know what that's like. We have to completely reinvent the wheel in our inside ourselves, in our family systems. It's new. It's really new.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing is I think it's easy to say certain things about certain temperaments or qualities of children and like attribute it to our parenting. But that is so important to understand that from our perspective, that's absolutely not our goal. Like that is so far from what I'm interested in focusing on. And I'm working so freaking hard to like, you know, disentangle my relationship to her behavior from my philosophy in my mind. Like it's so nuanced. It's much more deep than me just saying like, oh, my kid's a good eater because we've done, you know, low pressure, just lots of exposures. Like these are great tips and tricks and strategies and things to encourage intuitive eating. But ultimately like kids go through phases. It's so important for my mindset to not attach to her being a good eater and then being super thrown off when she goes through inevitably a picky stage. Or is really emotional at 2 and then calms down at 3 or whatever. I try to really like refrain from attributing the way that she is to my great parenting or my not so good parenting or her influences externally.
That's so great. A story that comes to mind, because I've been trying to take notes about what's going well, is Tori has some friends, not all of them, but a couple of them who don't really say much to me. I mean, I think when they're with her, they all blah, 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 but like to adults, they're not that talkative. I have some of her friends that we just play for. I mean, she's having a friend over right now when all they want to do is play with me. That's all. They want me to play all these games with them and take them swimming and take them. They just want me to be with them. And I just love that. But she's other friends who just don't really like connect with adults that much.
Yeah.
And I was picking her up from her friend's house and I was driving her friend to her other house because they're divorced. And in the car, like they had just spent hours together. I was like, hey guys, how was your play date? And they're both like, fine. And then I was like, what'd you guys do? And they're like, this. And they both answered one word to like everything. And then I just, you know, I kept trying, then I stopped. And then the friend gets out of the car. And then Tori says to me, Mom, you have to play it cool. Don't ask so many questions. And I'm like, oh, really? That was too much? She's like, yes, don't push so hard. I'm like, okay. And then she goes, okay, now I have to tell you everything. She just told me everything they did, everything she felt, everything she was struggling with. And I was just like, oh, this is the best. You know, whenever she shares with me, I feel that it's grace, that it's a gift, and that I've somehow earned that. Maybe, like you said, maybe not. All kids are different. Maybe some kids are quiet and internal and they don't tell their parents that it's not their parents' fault. But for me right now, it is a gift. She tells me what she's thinking about. She asks for advice. She has feelings. And it's just like, that's the major payoff for what I'm doing, is those moments, those hours of mutuality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that is like one of the payoffs, whether they're sharing with you openly or not. If you come from a non-coercive perspective, you know, it's kind of known in your relationship that like you're striving to see her as an equal and your kids as an equal. And if you're a non-coercive parent and you think about this stuff a lot, your kids are, if they're old enough, they likely know that. You've probably had conversations about how you parent and why you think these things and why you don't limit them and you don't provide consequences and all the things. Like they're aware. It's probably likely that they're aware that you come from this sort of perspective. And
oh, absolutely. Even the fact that she said, don't push, don't try so hard. I'm so honored, because what a lot of kids do is when they feel controlled and invaded, they just tune their parents out.
Yeah.
I see that with a lot of my friends' kids. They just tune the parents out. And I'm working so hard to make sure that I'm really listening to her and adjusting so that she doesn't have to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, if the kid is quiet, but you come from an equal playing field, it's so different. The entire experience of that relationship is so different than if you're coming from an unequal playing field, the traditional power over traditional parenting dynamic, that, you know, your kid can be however they are. Like, that's just kind of like the point of this story, that it's wonderful that she's open to sharing with you and she knows she can feel safe. And even if she were quiet, you would then adapt to that. Like, you would be there for her in whatever capacity she needs to try to let her lead. Like, I just think that that is, I don't know. There's something really deeply touching about that. I've worked with a lot of kids who are like kind of more hesitant, quieter. And I think that they are craving to be seen in that, just as the kids who are sharing and wanting to open up, you know, like there's something so beautiful about the non-coercive approach to however your kid is. Like, it's just, it's like touching to me.
Well, that's interesting, because I'm planning for the time where maybe she won't be telling me everything. I'm definitely, she's 12, everyone. So she's tweening.
Yeah.
You know, and so they still want to play with me. And I know there might come a time where they don't want to play with me. The friends, they're having their sleepover and like, they really don't want to play with me, you know, or she doesn't want to tell me. I am going to try to do what you're talking about, which is just meet her somewhere, even if it's non-verbally. Maybe it's just sitting with her. I have no idea, but I'm going to adapt.
Yeah, it's really hard to do that when it's your kid, because it's like, it's your kid. Like, but you're my kid. I want to know. Come on, tell me. It's like, it's easy to do that and like pull on your own child. They're your own child. But I love this idea that like, we want to try not to do that, because we're really trying to let them know that we are going to be whatever it is they need, and that they know that they can come to us and all the things. And yeah, I just think it's like a very sweet place for your mind to rest inside of the, like, maybe the potential of like the pulling away and the individuation and the holding things closely. Like, as we know, like all of these things are phases, and they go in and out of them at times. And so we as parents can be exactly what they need by like really trusting the process of that. And I love that. That is so comforting to me. You know what I mean?
I think so.
That I don't have to always show up with like the right strategy to get the information out, or to say the right thing, that like, I can just kind of rest on like, okay, I am working in this non-coercive dynamic so that my kid knows that I see her as an equal, meaning that if she needs help, I'm here for whatever that help is. Right. And that's just going to be reinforced constantly. Like,
right. I mean, you can talk about your version of this, but what's reinforced in our relationship is her giving me feedback.
Yes. Yes.
Regularly, if not daily, about what she likes and doesn't like about how I'm treating her.
Well, that's it. Right. Cause from the other dynamic, you can't, you won't have insight into that. Right. Or you're at least maybe not even listening, because boundaries are boundaries in that mindset. Right. Like, no matter what they say to you, you have to hold your boundary. But in this dynamic, we really hear them. We want to know, well, how did that feel? So let me actually not see it as weak parenting or permissive parenting to adapt to what you're telling me. It just gives me like a lot of like fuel in the tank to keep going with it. When I hear things like, oh, she always gives me feedback. My kids too. It's not like she can cry. When I, like this morning, I was getting her dressed and I said, you just need to wait. And I was getting a little bit firm. Not something I would have wanted to say, but anyway, my patience was not where it should have been. And I said, you just need to wait. And she just burst into tears. And I was like, well, of course, like, that's not how I talk to her. Like, why would I, you know? Right. So the feedback is different, though. If she were a teenager or older, she would say, mom, you know, when you say that to me, like, this is how I feel or whatever. It just, I think I'm like craving that. Like, I'm craving the feedback. It's going to be really, I think, helpful for me to show up better and differently and more attuned.
But she did give you feedback.
She did, is what I'm saying. She did give me feedback, but it was like a burst into tears. And that is like, that's triggering. That's hard. It's like, oh, I made you sob. And like, it's just, it's challenging for me to not take that super personally and feel like an asshole. And I know that shows up still especially when they're using words that are hard to hear. But yeah.
But it is feedback. I mean, that's the feedback she has, and you're listening.
That's it, right? And so I'll take that and be like, okay, you know, what could I have done differently? There's so many things that I'll think after I get feedback.
I have a couple stories that are coming to mind. I'm kind of overwhelmed with them. I got to think which one's first. Oh, well, one is just from what we were talking about before, is my daughter wanted to tell me a secret. She said, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to mention it once. And I don't ever want you to bring it up again unless I do. Can you believe that? I said, okay, I unfortunately have broken that. What I did was, like, a couple months later, I was like, can I bring up the thing that I'm not supposed to bring up? She goes, no. I was like, okay. Then I tried again a couple months later. You know that thing you said I'm never supposed to bring up? Can I bring it up now? No. So she's not ready. But I still feel maybe I shouldn't even do that. She told me not to. I guess I really shouldn't. My point is, I am the luckiest person in the world that she told me. And that it's a testament to her, I can't explain it, but like emotional intelligence that mm-hmm. she figured out how to tell me something without me being invasive, like for her to protect herself and like tell me. I mean, I just see that as such a reach for connection.
Yeah.
And that's why we're doing this philosophy.
Yes. Yes. Because of course the tagline is cultivating closeness with your children. Yeah. That's what it is. Even if the closeness doesn't look like your kid being like, I have a secret, but don't bring it up. And then you follow that and whatever. It's like, it can show up in so many little bitty nuanced ways. You know what I mean? Like it shows up in like all these little tiny, like their little blessings and little gifts. And yeah, I think that's why I get so triggered with negative feedback, because I'm like, oh, I fucked it up. I'm like, you know, being a dick and I'm ruining our closeness, and it's really hard
there
to
hear.
There
is no other way, Kara. That's what I'm telling you. There's no other way to learn except by fucking up. There's no other way.
Yeah.
That's why I'm so touched by my followers on TikTok, because they're always admitting everything. They're always like, yes, that's me. I always give advice and I don't want to. And thank you for reminding me. And, you know, like, I'm so touched by how humbling, you know, my TikToks are. And parents are like taking it. Like, they want to be called out for their behaviors. They find it helpful. I find that amazing. Okay, but I wanted to tell a story, which I think I told you, but I think it's worth telling here, which is I'm generally usually full of trauma on my birthday. My birthday is like one of the hardest days of the year. When I was single and didn't have kids or a partner, I would just crumble into a million pieces. And it's gotten better through the years, but I never know. Some birthdays are kind of okay, and some of them it's like I can't even function. So this birthday, which was like a week ago, I was going to sleep in, and my partner had to go out and get something, and my daughter had a shirt that was stuck and she couldn't get it off. So she woke me up. It wasn't even that early. But anyway, I woke up and I helped her get her shirt off. And then I was just like, you know what? I had one morning, my birthday, that I could sleep in, and you woke me up. I am so pissed. And I got up and like left the room. Like, and I'm not usually like that. And then she just started bawling. And then she went into her room and she was standing in the closet bawling. And it just took me a minute to be like, oh my God, that sucked. So then I followed her into her room and I was like, sweetheart, I'm so sorry. Like, that was just my birthday blues. Like, that was my birthday parts coming out. It's not about you. I'm so sorry. I feel so bad. She was like, I feel so bad because I ruined your birthday and I woke you up and I'm so sorry. And I'm like, no, honey, it's even if that's true, I shouldn't talk to you that way. And like, we're going back and forth. And then I go, can you just do forgive me? And she was like, I forgive you. And then we were like, went and sat on the bed. And I was like, I'm sorry. My birthday is just so hard. And I started crying. And I was like kind of crying in a kind of collapsed way. And she like put her hand on my shoulder. And she was like, Mom, I don't want to have to take care of you.
Wow. I did not think that was coming.
I was like, you're right. You're right. This is not your job. I was like, I'm going to go get support. She's like, okay. And then I went and I got support.
Yeah. Oh my God. Wow.
And I left there and I was like, I mean, can you even imagine when we were kids, if we could have said that to our parents, if we could have said like, hey, you're collapsing into your child self and it's not my job. I mean, can you imagine if we could do that? Wow. We could have done that. I would be a different person than I am today. I wouldn't have like a million years of therapy trying to undo all of my caretaking, losing myself, giving myself up, and gaslighting myself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When she does stuff like that, it's some of the happiest parenting moments that I have.
Yeah. And the fact that she can only do that because you know, she knows that you will respond to it. That is what you need to hear from her as the message of, do what I need. You're my parent and I trust you to do the job that I need you to do. I mean,
and my opinion matters. My opinion matters. And it's not just a power dynamic, because I think a lot of parents, and we won't get off on how shaming, guilt tripping a lot of parents are, but there's a lot of, I do this and this and this for you.
Yeah.
You can listen to me cry, or you should, you know, you can take care of me because I do so much for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's very, very common. It's like, I expect you to take care of me since I do so much for you. I remember my dad used to say, I work all day. All I expect is a hug when I get in at the end of the day. And we had to hug him. I didn't want to hug him. I had to hug him every day.
Yeah.
We had to pretend and go, Daddy. No, I mean, I found my dad terrifying and I had to force myself to act all sweet and hug him.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
Mm. Yeah, that just
would get mad if we didn't all greet him with joy and hug him.
Just makes me really sad. I don't want to talk about it a ton, but I just do think that that is like such a another one of those examples that, like, you know, goes off into a million different directions. You can think about that in a million ways, like just setting a boundary because you're the parent and what I say is for me. And so, you know, we don't actually negotiate these things. Well, like we always say, like you can apply that to anything that you want as a parent if you're not thinking about it differently. And so the fact that you've never done that, or you started unlearning that way of doing things with Tori, that she just has permission and is in fact always encouraged to be like, hey, mom, I need you this way, not this way. I need this from you, not this from you.
Yeah.
Like most kids, just because of this like traditional parenting mindset at its core, just like doesn't invite kids to have a say at all.
Right. And then they don't actually have a self-reflective process because they've had to shut that down and perform.
Mm-hmm.
And I do see that with, you know, Tori's 12, most of her friends are 12. And she says that most of her friends can't talk about their feelings about anything. Like they can have fun and play and they can get upset and they can be reactive, but they can't actually say, this is what's coming up for me. And my daughter has that ability because of this whole thing we're doing, but most kids her age don't have that capacity yet.
Mm.
Because I'm modeling, I have a process.
Yeah, exactly. Here's what it's like. Here's what it's like to have a process. That's the thing. See, that's another huge part of this, is that when you are internally working on yourself as a parent, then you're modeling that all the time.
Right. Right. And you're a person with a process. I think a lot of parents, they don't reveal their process.
Right.
Why they're reacting. Yeah, I told you this, but I've had a really positive experience with one of my friends.
Yes.
I've noticed for actually years, and I haven't said anything for years.
Oh, this is such a good story. Rithia sent me a voice note on this, and I literally was like, giddy. It's a great one.
Yeah, I didn't want to hurt our friendship, and I didn't want her to feel that. See, I spend lots and lots of time with her and her kids, and I didn't want her to feel self-conscious about parenting with me around and be like, oh God, Rithia's evaluating me. I didn't want her to feel that way. So I didn't really say anything, but I finally felt that it was affecting me. Like it was affecting our connection, my friendship. It was affecting our friendship. So I just thought about it a lot and how I wanted to say it. And I started with, I have some reflections on your parenting, your daughter, particularly this particular daughter. And I'm wondering if you're open to it. Would that be okay? And I'm doing it from love because I love you and I want to be closer to you. That's why I'm giving you this feedback. And she said, yes, I would be really open to that. So I said, well, what I notice is that, let's just say, I'm not going to say the kid's name. So let's say the kid's name is Jenny or something. Okay. I was like, I noticed that you order Jenny around. Like you say, do this, don't do that. Come here, put that away, close that, put your coat on, take it off. Be quiet. You guys go upstairs. Like just generally, that's the tone all the time. Is just tell your kid what to do. And for some reason, her kid does it. She hardly ever argues back, which is wild. And it's just very authoritarian. It's like, I'm in charge and you're a body and I tell this body what's to do all day long. And the body does what I said. Now, I don't know how she gets her daughter to do all that. But anyway, she said, wow, thank you so much. I don't want to do that. That's not how I want to be. And I was like, really? And she goes, yeah, I want to look at what's underneath my need to treat her that way. I really want to see what's underneath that. And I was like, wow, that's awesome. I was like, I'd love to hear what you discover. And she's like, okay. And yeah,
we haven't any updates connected. Since then?
This was we haven't hung out since then.
Yeah.
With the
this
kid.
Would be a really this would be a really yeah. interesting case study, like to follow up with this person. I don't know if they'd be willing to share like with you. They could be anonymous or whatever, but maybe you'd report back. But because, you know, you're saying like, what is it about this particular dynamic where the kid just kind of follows? Because I know my child, I guess when you think about it, if I had been coercive from birth and had done the whole really traditional, like firm boundaries, like I'd still probably be, just because I'm me, I'd probably be very like loving looking, like warm and like cuddly and affectionate. But then I could easily have been very firm and strict, I guess. And I'm curious if like my kid would shut down already. But because I'm not, and I haven't ever done that, she is so never, ever going to follow one of my directions. I mean, I don't even bother because it's like, it would be completely futile. And I'd be so curious if that parent from birth, basically, it sounds like maybe it was the case that they were operating out of such, you know, covert and overt coercion that like the kid had no choice but to just like kids will adapt right to their environment. So it's like, I'm assuming that kid probably shut down a big part of themselves.
That was my sense, is that it's so conditioned from such an early age.
Because my clients will tell me that, right? Like my teen clients who are talking about like their big challenges in their early adulthood, or like their, so some of my teen clients I've worked with from teenager and now they're young adults. And anyway, so my younger adult clients / teen clients will tell me about the dynamic. I'll try to get them to see if they can remember childhood experiences. And usually like the script was like, you know, you're okay. Don't cry. Like you're fine. Get up, you know, go on. They had chores. They had responsibilities from like a very young age. Coercion is clear. And I see that theme. They're like, whoa, what do you mean? Like I've always been coerced. Like when we talk about coercion, they're like, oh, you mean I've always been controlled? Wait, so you're saying like, I don't even maybe know who I am. It's like this wild realization that they have in therapy when we start talking about how coercion actually does start in infancy.
Then what happens when they start?
I mean, they're usually seeing me because they have, oh, you mean after the realization?
No, I mean, what you were just saying, they're seeing you because
Seeing me because they have challenges emotionally, like interpersonally, like figuring out what their values are. Like they don't know who they are or what they want to do. And they struggle to find themselves. And when I bring in, when I ask them about their parenting and their history and I talk about coercion, usually they're like, holy shit. Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess I was coerced. I thought my parents were fairly chill, but I guess, wow. Yeah, no, we were definitely not really allowed to cry for very long. We had to like get on with it. And we were definitely forced to say sorry. And it's like, you're talking to them about why they don't share their feelings with their parents. And they're like, well, that wouldn't be an option. They'd just fight with me. What do you mean? Right. It's really obvious that they have to, what I'm saying is shut down, to hide it, to swallow it, to suppress it. And usually I find from the attachment perspective, like these ruptures, they cause the child to go and kind of cope in ways that are challenging for them to work through. Like they don't have a process, right? So
yeah. And I also want to say that I was a the golden child. I was the golden child in my family. And I have many clients who were the golden child. So and kids like us, we performed just how we thought our parents wanted us to be. I mean, I was an overachiever. I was always busy. I had tons of friends. I did really good in school. I was the perfect kid. And I was completely splitting off and burying all the things, all the negativity that unfortunately exploded when I got away from them.
Mm-hmm.
It exploded, you know, and I went into heavy long-term trauma, but this is a story of a lot of my clients. And I bring that up because sometimes it looks like the child is doing great.
Yeah.
They're doing great. They're the valedictorian. I mean, we know this. We know like highly successful people doesn't mean that things are going well inside.
Mm-hmm.
So for this person who's being ordered around and it looks like she's fine with it, we don't really know where that's going to go. We don't how that's going to manifest.
Right.
Maybe, you know, also maybe when you've been controlled your whole life, you'll get really heavily into addictions because you'll need to escape from feeling so controlled. So, you know, so disconnected from your own authenticity.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I always argue that like being unable to access your self energy and your authenticity and explore what that is for you, when you're cut off from that, or you're almost like in a prison from being able to do that, I believe that that is harmful. I believe that that's where a lot of people's issues come from. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the whole philosophy on parts work. We're trying to have all the parts communicate. Everybody inside the system opens up and shares and provides answers to, you know, why we behave in certain ways. It doesn't always have to look like an addiction or something that's obviously harmful.
Right, right.
But the point is internal suffering, it has to come out. It has a need, right? These things that we struggle with, like they're all needs that we need to figure out what are they, like, where are they coming from and what are they and why are they there and what can we do and to connect with who we really are. And coercion doesn't allow for that free exploration.
No,
it doesn't. We have to shut it down, right? Because we want good behavior. We want them to meet our needs.
Our needs. You know, something my daughter does, she's been doing this forever, but she does. She just did it the other day and I thought it was so funny. I think I was waking her up and I went to hug her and she goes, "Don't touch me." And I'm like, "Okay." And then she goes, "Hug me." And I hug her. And then while I'm hugging her, she goes, "Get away from me." And I get away from her. Then she goes, "Hug me." And then I hug her. She does this all the time. And I'm always like, she's practicing her boundaries. I love this. I love this. Even if she said, "Get away from me," and didn't ask me then again to hug her. But there's so many, you know, you could get very reactive to that. You could be like, "Hey, that hurts my feelings." You know, which one is it?
Exactly. I was going to say, you could say something totally sassy too. You could just be like, "Well, you know, Jesus, like, you're in a mood," and like, yeah, really just kind of like rupture the whole
shaming. Yeah. Yes.
Just shaming and being like, making it about them, right? You're the like, problem. Oh,
someone's hormonal. Or whatever.
Exactly. Like, "Oh, you must be on your period." Like, you know, it's, I have such a problem with that too. Like the little sort of like attitude stuff that parents like throw to their kids, and they kind of like, you'll hear parents talk about it in a joking way. I take it really seriously, but I guess I'm a teen therapist too. So it's like, I can see it through the eyes of my teen clients and I'm like, "Oh God, no, you're really hurting them." They don't realize, parents really don't realize that like, that is actually it can be like death by a thousand cuts. If you think about your partner, imagine a partner says to the other partner, "Oh, you must be on your period. Jesus, you're hormonal." Right. Well, that would be like really serious.
Oh, someone's in a mood. Someone's in a mood today.
Yeah.
Like, "Oh, excuse me." Or like all that kind of passive aggressive, you know.
Just with this mindset, like, you see it totally differently. You see it totally differently. You're like, "Oh, practicing," or you can like flip it. It's like, "Whoa, what a good way to assert yourself."
Right, exactly. That's how I saw it. I find it really hilarious. It actually really makes me laugh. And
I do too. I was like, "That's amazing. I love her so much."
It's so funny. She's also funny how she does.
But some parents would say, "Wow, that sounds like she's so fucking rude."
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
I don't usually say things like, "I need you to blah, blah, blah." It's not usually, but I've been noticing lately that I can be really opinionated because we've built up all this trust. So it doesn't feel like I can be like that, you know, I don't like that. I can say stuff like that more now because I can't explain it. There's just a lot more friendship.
Yeah. I also like, I don't know. I feel like I love that though, because isn't the point for you to mess up or say something maybe that you're like, "Oh, wait, was that the right thing?" And then you can tell that to her later. "Oh, I was wondering about this. How'd that feel?" Or she might say to you back, "Hey, why are you getting, you know, why are you saying stuff like that? That doesn't sit well with me." I don't know. I feel like even when we say things that are maybe a little coercive, it's like, yeah, but in this relationship, like you always tell me, the point is that we say these things and then we think about it after, talk about it after, have a process about it, find what feels good.
Yeah, right. And that's the point. I don't have to be perfect. It's just that I try not to have an annoyed tone. It's very
hard. I do too. It's very hard. Well, you know what I've been struggling with too is like suppressing that for me. It really eats away at like my capacity to function. Like if I just swallow, if I play that role of like happy mommy, like really forced energy just to like move her through without a struggle and do all the playful stuff and I'm like faking it, I find that exhausting.
Yes.
I'm obviously not going to like yell at her if I really wanted to. I'm going to like probably lean more into like playfulness just so I can like mask that urge and get on with it and be like, "Okay, I showed up as the mom I'm trying to be, and I'm happy, but it eats away at my capacity. Like I'm like, yeah, I'm so depleted after I do that. And I think finding the balance of like just being authentic as a parent as well, that's also crucial for our well-being. We have
to
be able
really
to like
good point.
Say stuff.
Yeah, because right, because we're not like, just want to say in this podcast, we're not trying to tell people to also act like a happy, nice person all day long. Like,
yeah,
right. That's not it either. It's not like faking your parenting so that you don't sound like an asshole.
Yeah.
when your underlying intention might be really different than that. Because we all have parents who had like fake fronts. I mean, many of us, like they put on the parent thing, but underneath it was all this rage or all this force or, you know, drinking or, you know, that's not the answer either, is to just fake it because you're not supposed to be mean.
I will often tell my kid I'm really tired or something. Yeah. Because I just want her to understand that, like, I'm not, like, I said to her the other day, honestly, I really did. I was lying on the couch and she wanted to play and it was the crack of dawn and whatever. My husband was sick, so he was in bed and I was alone and I was totally exhausted, haven't slept well in a few days. So I just told her, I said, oh, Leah, like, I know you love when I'm happy, fun. She was saying, play, mommy, play, 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 play with the toys, play. And I was like, I know you love when I'm like happy and fun and playing with the toys. I'm just going to have to lie here and like play with the horse and like I'll do my best, but I'm just going to have to lay here and do that. And she really does accept things like that. Like she kind of just gets it. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. And even if she didn't, I'm sure I'd be able to move through that in some way. I'd probably get up and sit on the floor or something. Like I'd make a pillow on the floor. I don't know. Maybe we'd build a cave and we both lie down there. I'd find a way to get my needs met, but I'd be honest with her about what I'm feeling. So I've cried in front of her and I've told her I'm really sad, really sad. I'll tell her like, I miss Nana or, you know, I miss Uncle Russell or, you know, I'll tell her stuff. Cause I'm like, she's got to know that I have moods.
Right. Well, you know, the story I told about my daughter saying, I don't want to have to take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought about it and I was very much in a child state. I mm-hmm. was not in my adult. And so her response was appropriate. A couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine died and I was in the kitchen crying and she came in and put her arms around me and held me for a little bit.
Mm.
She does have empathy. It's not that she's like, shut the fuck up or like, get away from me when I have feelings. It's just, she can feel when I'm pulling on her or it devolving into a state where someone needs to take care of me and it
right.
should
this
not
is
be
the,
her.
This is such a good important distinction because when I'm telling my kid like I'm not in my happy mommy energy, I'm not asking anything of her. But if we right. transition into like, support me please,
right,
kiss me because that makes me happy,
right,
you know, come give mommy a hug because mommy's sad and you'll make, I would yes. never say that to her. Like that puts her fixing my emotions onto her.
Right.
So you have like, I know it's a constant, like just making sure we're checking ourselves, but sometimes you slip into that by accident and you might say that, but it's just being aware. I think I couldn't decide what to talk about. I have like a few things.
Okay.
I feel like the biggest one when I was talking to my husband about this, I was saying like, well, we're talking about what's going well in the parenting in terms of like the context of non-coercion. And we started talking about behavioral things or like personality things that we noticed, like things she's been doing lately. But one of the things that stood out was he said, you know, well, what about how you feel about eating? And I was like, okay, I could probably talk about that because eating for me has always been since the beginning a non-issue. I'm very lucky too that I was raised by parents who were really neutral about food. So I've been able to really be unbothered about what she eats and what she doesn't eat, even if she skips dinner entirely, but she won't eat anything. You know, that's a common challenge for parents. But foods in my house growing up were never restricted or off limits. That's one of the things my parents were really intentional about. And I'm really grateful for that approach because I was the house growing up where all my friends would come over and like we had all the good snacks. And I hardly really, sometimes I'd eat them, most of the time I wouldn't. You know, there'd be like chocolate, there'd be biscuits, there'd be like chips and candy. And like, I'd be like, eh, you know, take it or leave it. And some of my friends who were raised in like really healthy, quote unquote, houses with like nothing processed would come over and like binge on all the food at
that
my
was
house.
Me.
Right.
That was me. Oh my God. It didn't have the charge for
it
you.
It did not have a charge for me at all. And no. It's funny, I've talked to my parents about this and they really like didn't I'm not sure. I'd be curious to like have them listen. I'm going to have them listen to this part and I'm going to come back and be like, hey, what was your guys' mindset around food and see if I can understand. But from my understanding, they just really did not want to create any food, weird relationship stuff. They were also always, you know, snackers. They would like to have popcorn and like chips, and my dad loves chocolate and sweets. And we just always bonded over that. Like it was not a thing where like you weren't allowed to eat certain things. Now, if my mom had dinner ready on the table or like had it ready to be prepared, it's not like we were going to go to McDonald's. But if there's food in the house and going to McDonald's here and there, and like my mom would like love to like go to the drive-thru and things like that. Like it was just, there was never any like bad or good talk about food. It was just like a fun.
Remarkable. I don't think I've ever met anybody like that.
I think it must be incredibly rare. And I think I'm only now that I'm a parent really appreciating what that did for me, because I have such a healthy relationship with food. I also need to say that I have always been thin and tall because I'm 6 feet and my dad is 6'8" and he's also thin. So body stuff was not really something that, of course, I had insecurities just because like there's always something that I could.
You didn't have to deal with a certain level of oppression. You had thin privilege. You had white privilege.
That's what I'm saying. I would just, right. I was always had a fast metabolism and that was just the way that it was. So I'm saying body image and food relationship and being able to be eat intuitively, as we all know, super tied together. So I can't just like mention that like my parents provided food in a neutral way. And that was the answer. Like obviously the factor of us being thin also is part of that. So now with my daughter, all of these things mean that I can just serve a wide variety of foods. Like it's always been my mantra to just present a bunch of options. So like we don't have things that are off limits. Like if she wants to eat French fries, like we'll usually be able to have French fries. Like we can go get them or we'll have them on Friday or whatever. I feel like I've really intentionally and also I've been able to actually model a healthy attitude towards food, or like a neutral attitude, I should say. Like all foods are foods is kind of how I see it. They're just foods. And I really try not to talk about like foods being good or bad or healthy or unhealthy. Like I try not to even say healthy. It's a long-winded way of saying, and again, I don't want to say that my kid is an excellent eater, which she is and has been because of my approach, but she is an excellent eater and she eats like her favorite food is like dal, like Indian food and roti and rice. And she eats a ton of spicy stuff and a ton of whatever, like whatever we have, she eats. But the point is my mindset around trusting her process, which is part of the non-coercion, not having limits around food, which is part of non-coercion, collaborating with her. If she wants cookies, I'll say, yes, let's definitely have cookies with dinner. Or if she's like, no, I want it now. I'm like, sure, you can have a cookie now. And I can put a couple on your plate with dinner. Like I really try to let her eat intuitively, like encourage her to eat intuitively, welcome all of her food questions, her food interests. I just really want to get out of the way. And I feel like I've been doing that really well. And I'm, you know, also able to do that really well because of my history. Maybe it's part of just the way she is as well. A really, really good eater, an exploratory eater, a curious eater, really loves food.
I don't think it's completely one or the other. I mean, there's no way that your open, easy attitude is not affecting her. It absolutely is.
I see, so I've read a lot about the research on cultivating a healthy relationship with food, and this is the approach that you take, right? Like you really want to never force or limit. You they'll talk about like maybe having a snack routine, which we've never done. I've just kind of always gone with her whenever she wants to eat. And the most important thing that you'll see in the research is having like an open attitude towards eating and never pressuring. And that's just so easy for me to access. It's not a forced thing. It's not a fake thing, which I really appreciate for some parents. It is. They have to learn that. And obviously, given their history, it's really hard. But for me, because I'm just actually, I feel that way. There's never been any place where I need to pressure her. Like I will never say like, just one more bite. You know, you've only got a little bit left. I'll just say, are you full? Do you want any more? And she'll be like, yes or no. And then that is literally the end of it. I don't even think about it again.
That's so wonderful.
So yeah, I feel like that's a huge thing for me because it just eating and meals can really consume a parent. And for
I mean, this
so
is
far,
one of the top three trigger issues
for sure.
That messy rooms, you know, mess and food. you know, especially with younger kids.
Selective eating in toddlerhood is common, more common than not. And when she does go through phases like that, like, I'm just like, oh, it's a phase. I just can let it go and roll with it and trust that she'll get back. And even if she didn't, I mean, I would always offer a safe food and I would offer other foods and that would be what I would do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, like a lot of, not to get off on this, but just a lot of parents say, I can't do that because my kid will just eat, you know, cookies or ice cream all day long. Mm-hmm. And my daughter did that when she was getting off my restricted control from I didn't let her eat sweets very much at all when she up until the age of five. Then we went non-coercive. I opened it all up. And then she started just going absolutely crazy on sweets. And a lot of that was her making up for having been restricted for 5 years and wanting to make sure that she could have the freedom by just having it as much as she could. And I had to allow for that, just like any of us would do if we mm-hmm. had been forced off of certain things. But it really has balanced out. It absolutely has. But it didn't take months. It took years to balance out. And I don't think parents understand that. They want to know their child can self-regulate pretty quickly. They're like, wait, how soon is my kid going to self-regulate? I don't know. It can take years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really never want to come off as like you need to do what I do because I'm better or like this is the way. But I really believe in the approach that I've taken since birth with food. I really think that that's a good way to start out a relationship with food. And if you haven't had the privilege of being able to start it out that way, then I guess letting go of this perceived timeline, like you have to really trust the process. That would be so hard, but that would be part of it. If you're going to be non-coercive with food and try to let go of all the limits and restrictions, then you would have to go, okay, like it's just going to take as long as it takes for them to have their own, develop their own relationship now that I'm not controlling
it. It's called the tornado phase when everything explodes. Vivek Patel calls it the tornado phase. But I just want to say that my daughter went through probably 2 years of wanting me to get her Burger King and McDonald's for mm-hmm. lunch. And I gave her allowance. So I would say like, honey, I don't have the money to get you that. And she'd be like, that's okay. You can use my allowance. And so during my lunch breaks, like between clients, I would go and get her fast food. I cannot tell you how challenging and painful that was for me. It was so hard. I mean, she did it like she had enough of her allowance to do it like 3 times a week for a while.
And but you know, the other thing is if she went to school and could walk to, cause that's what we used to do as kids. Like when I went to middle school, we would walk to like Wendy's or Burger King every single lunch and use our allowance. Right. Or I babysat. So I always had usually a few bucks. We did that. Like we would go and do that. So what I'm saying is like, even if you're limiting, you know, like I'm saying my best friend who was restricted around eating, she'd come still with us to Burger King every day with her own money, or I'd pay for her cause she'd be broke. So kids will find a way and you happen to be involved by, you know, going and picking it up. It's like parents.
But I wanted to tell the story that I'm going and picking it up. I was really wanted you all to hear that I actually, because I'm a non-coercive parent, mm-hmm. part of the philosophy is that you support your child's wants and needs and desires without judgment, no wrongness. Yeah. So even though I was taught that fast food is terrible for you and I was never allowed to have it, I didn't have it my whole childhood. I was just trusting her process. Now her dad, without dissing him too much, he's always telling her she's going to get cancer. I hate that. He's always like, that causes cancer, which is really not a good thing to tell your kid because it implants a lot of fear in food and a lot of like beliefs that if you eat certain things, you'll get cancer, which is like not directly true. And also just like a kid is going to literally take that the wrong way. So I'd always have to say to her, honey, don't think of it that way. That's not true. You can trust your body. Listen to your body. Anyway, she did fast food for like 2 years. She decided to boycott Burger King and McDonald's and Starbucks. And she stopped it all immediately because she for political reasons. Could you believe that? That's it. She hasn't gone back. It's been a year.
And the point that I was going to make too is like, even if she was in school, didn't have access to you and you weren't like able to provide her the food, like the kids will go and get it. The kids will go and get it. Yes. I think like, it's just like so important for parents to remember that like you aren't the only influence on your kid. So if you have restrictions and limits and stuff, please know that there are other places your kid can go.
That's the thing. As me being the people pleasing perfect child, I was sneaking everything all the time. I had a whole secret life, which most people think is normal. Oh, well, that's normal. That's how kids are. No, I had a secret life because I couldn't tell my parents anything because they were not safe, because I did not trust them. And I had to experiment with things without their supervision, without their help, without the education. It was terrible. It was dangerous and terrible. And my daughter got to eat fast food and, you know, experience it with me right there. That's fine. And many, 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 many other things that I, you know, like video games. She went crazy on video games for 3 years, whatever. Then one day she was sick of it. Not everybody's like that. Some kids do video games their whole life and then it becomes part of their adult life. That's fine. I'm not judging that. I'm just saying that parents judge video games and they say, no, not in our house. So you can only do an hour a day, blah, 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 all of that. And again, your kids will find a way. They will go around you. That's why that's why this approach is about how to actually be close so you can be there for it.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to bring up the eating thing, because I do feel really good about this approach and how it's connected to how I see it. And it gives me a lot of comfort to know that I'm right there with her. Whatever she decides to eat, it's not going to be a barrier in our relationship.
So maybe we should each tell one more thing and then we should go.
Okay.
I'm going to think of one more reason why. What's a benefit? Okay, I thought of one. Do you have one?
I think so.
Do you want me to start?
Yeah.
Okay, so my kid was a big no kid.
My kid too.
Yeah, and because we got divorced, she was very scared a lot. She said no to like almost everything all the time. And she's homeschooled, so she just want to be home, just doing her thing. She didn't like, I mean, she's always had friends and she's always had play dates and we always have family gatherings. So like, that's a big yes. We have community connection, but there's a like, no to trying new things, no to museums, no to new movies, no to, I can't even tell you, just everything, just no to taking walks, no to going outside, no to like, let's do this together. No, you know, it's like lots and lots and lots of no. And that's when I started getting into this non-coercive lifestyle, I started to work deeply on myself to trust her process and to let go of controlling her. And that took years of her tantruming, which I've talked about on this podcast, years of heavy, heavy tantruming, years of her hitting me, hitting other children, you know, lots and lots of behavioral stuff. I mean, someone would call it behavioral stuff. I would call it big feelings, big traumas, and, you know, big triggers for whatever her development challenges were. And I don't know when, I don't know why, but there was this period of time, like maybe 2 years ago, where I felt like she was resolving her trauma. I just felt it. I felt like we were coming through something. It could have been that her brain hit a certain level of development. It could have been that I gave her so much attention, so many sessions, raging sessions, that I sat with her when she cried. I mean, it could be that we actually worked through it, but she has become like a yes person. Like we just went to New York City and she said yes to everything. It was so exciting. We tried new things. We tried new foods. We did adventures. We, you know, it's just, we're in our yes period. And I don't want to say all kids will get to their yes period, but like, I can cry all the time because of how radically, starkly different it is from where we started.
I don't know if this is, again, another way that my kid is kind of by nature, or if it's, you know, as we know, these things are not one or the other. They're always a combination. But what is happening with her now and has been happening since she was about, I think the first time she did it was like 20 months old or 21 months old, is she is incredibly emotionally aware. She can already label her feelings with accuracy and has been doing that since then. And when she's feeling them, so like not after the fact, but she'll say mad, like she'll say like, I'm mad, Aaliyah mad, or I'm sad, or she'll talk about disappointment. She can talk about emotions with accuracy. Like she deeply understands like what connects to what. We do a lot of things like feelings talk. And we like look at flashcards, but I think one of the most important aspects of the mindset is not just the never shaming or judging, but also just like the all feelings are neutral. Like all feelings are feelings. Same with food, right? It's like just looking at it in terms of like, this is a part of life. I want to be here for you no matter what. Like feel right. However you want to feel, let it out. You want to cry, cry. Like you want to yell, yell. Right. Thinking about it in my head that way really helps to genuinely show up for the feelings, then do the feelings talk and really like, I guess, model acceptance of all feelings. And that has also helped her to be able to then use them like with intention and use them productively, label them, share them, talk about them. She starts telling stories about how other kids are feeling. She can start hypothesizing about why other kids are feeling the way they're feeling. Like that's a really good skill to have. And again, I think she's kind of just one of those awake babies. Like she kind of was a conscious baby or whatever, but the way that we live in our house and talk about things with neutrality, I really think allows her to just like feel them, talk about them, be the way that she is without shame. And the mindset helps me with that. Because if I didn't have this mindset, I'd be like, oh, I need to stop her from crying, or I need to, she's badly behaved and I need to coach her out of this, teach her a new way. But I'm not teaching her new ways, you know?
Well, I think it's important when you keep saying the mindset. I know like a lot of our other podcasts are how hard we work to get here. So the food thing was not so hard for you because your parents actually did something well.
Yes. Feelings is hard for me though.
Right.
If you listen to our show, you probably know that.
Yeah. And for me, my parents were, I had a terrible childhood. So I've had to work for every little inch of being loving to my child. I mean, I am a naturally loving person, so my essence is intact, but I've had to work so hard not to react to her feelings, not to react to her anger, not to feel threatened by it, not to shut down around it, not to freeze, not to withdraw. Like I have to work really hard to stay present and be neutral about things like you're talking about. And I know that other people are listening and like, well, I'm so reactive. I can't control myself. And that's the work. That is the work.
Yeah. And I definitely didn't put that in because, you know, I'm a therapist. So like all of the feelings jargon is really easy. Like I definitely know how to teach kids or like model feelings, talk and flashcards and, you know, just communicating about feelings. That's easy because that is like a skill that I know through being a therapist and talking with children all the time. But internally as a parent, my kid and her feelings triggers me constantly. So my work is always to remove myself from the trigger and do all of the processing stuff that we've talked about before so that I can be who I want to be for my kid. You should listen to our other podcasts on that because I go on and on and never shut up about it.
And, you know, we're trying to be with our own feelings. Like we're trying to be with our own feelings so that then we can be with our children's feelings. And that's
the most hardest part.
Yeah. Yeah. Something my daughter is expressing a lot of self-criticism. This is the age, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Her friends don't express it out loud. So like she feels like she's different that way. And I just keep telling myself, she's telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause I do want to fix it. I really want to fix it. And I just keep telling myself, she's telling you how she feels. That's the win. That's the win. So you're in there with her. You don't have to fix it. You just have to be someone that she can talk to. So that's my focus. And sometimes I do, there is space for me to help. But a lot of times she really doesn't want that. That's not what she wants. She just wants to be heard.
Mm. Oh God, my teen parts are so relating with her. I had the worst that. Still do, really? Honestly. Something I struggle with a lot. Yeah, I was deeply insecure. I mean, severely.
Yeah. It seems like a torture, like a,
it was torturous. Yeah. Yeah. Torturous.
I think it is for her.
It's horrible. I feel so sad to hear that. I know how common it is. It's tied to your self-worth. I mean, completely.
Now you didn't grow up with Instagram and TikTok, did you?
No, we had Facebook though.
Well, do you think social media contributed to this state that you were in? Because I mean, now that's what everybody says it's about. People go, oh, well, it's because of social media. It's killing them. It's tearing them apart. Oh.
Well, people should remember that it's always been there. We've always had eyes. So we've always been able to compare ourselves to other people. And so that is really, I think, at the root of what's going on. You compare yourself to how other people are looking. There's beauty standards, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, I didn't have Facebook, but I had television. But that's not where I got. I mean, that's partly where I got it from. But I got it from being sexualized by adults as a children my whole life. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it wasn't.
I mean, I got it from external messaging. I got it from, like, I was really tall as a young child. I was told that, like, I was tall all the time. I was kind of made fun of. I was told I was ugly. Like, I had braces and glasses and super awkward, wasn't a cute, small, petite dancer like all my friends. Like, I don't know. I definitely didn't get it from social media. I do think, though, that social media has impacted my self-worth today.
Right.
Certainly. Right. Oh my God. My For You page on TikTok is like gorgeous models. Cause I'm really into, like, I love like beauty and model type look stuff. So fashion and all that. So I'm always on that side of TikTok, and it sends me into like doom spirals.
Well, why would you keep that on your For You page then?
We love to stay in our pattern. Like, we know what's good for us, and yet we don't go, you know what I mean? Like, I could, you know, exercise instead, but I'm on TikTok and I know it's bad and I know I'm doom spiraling and I still do it. So
right, I should just empathize. See, I just did it with you.
Yeah, you're like, why wouldn't you do it? Why would you do that? Go stop that. You know better.
It's hard not to try to fix it. It's like, it's don't really torture hard. Yourself.
Exactly.
It's the same with our kids. You know, my daughter thinks she might be lactose intolerant, but she just keeps eating the things that make her stomach hurt. And I'm like, can I get you help for this? She goes, no. And so then I just have to watch her do it. And that's,
well,
life.
That's like, man. That's like my husband who like says that his stomach always hurts after he eats pizza, and yet he still eats pizza. Like, I can't like go and like make him not do that. Like,
same with our kids. We can't. I mean, we can force them, but that doesn't mean when they grow up, they're not going to just do whatever the hell they want.
And we know this. I mean, I'm sure you know this as well as I do, Ruthie, as therapists. If we try to help our clients like that, if we try to step into advice, I mean, it never really goes well, does it? It never does. They're like, I'm not here for this. And I'm like, okay,
I would
wait.
Never say, why do you put that on your For You page? I would never say that to a client.
Exactly.
I know.
You just empathize with them and be like, wow, I know that shit is maddening. Right? But we can't seem to do that for our kids. But we also can't seem to do that for our partners. So like, you're not alone, parents. We just have to try.
I want to make a statement to end, which is I when I run my parent support groups, I always ask parents to keep a running list of the wins, like the moments of shining clarity that not controlling, judging, correcting, withdrawing, all this stuff. When you stop doing all the authoritarian power over behaviors and you have these shining moments of closeness, you should write it down. And not just closeness with your kid, but ways you see your child excelling or opening or expanding or loving themselves or expressing themselves or expressing their pain. Like, just keeping little notes, because we live in a world where we're just constantly brainwashed to do something, you know, to control our children. And that's good parenting. That's important to keep a tally on why we're doing this other thing that no one supports us to do.
Such excellent advice. Something I need to do more of.
All right. That's the end.
That's the end.
This has been Your Kids Don't Suck. You can find me, Kara Tedstone, at www.karatedstonetherapy.com and on Instagram at Kara Tedstone Therapy. On my website, you'll find links to recommended readings and a link to my Reparenting with Mindfulness workbook, available now on Amazon.
You can find me, Ruthie Lee, at www.ruthie.com. That's RYTHEA.com. There you'll find published books, articles, and music, and parenting videos. Also, I'm on TikTok at Ruthie Lee, on Instagram at Ruthie Lee. You can book parent mentoring sessions with me through my website. And also, I have an Advice from a Loving Bitch YouTube show that helps people heal self-hatred, and that's ruthie.com/advice. It is important and essential to put our voices, Ruthie and Kara, in a context. We are two white, cisgendered, straight, middle-class women living with financial and societal privilege. Because of this, our perspectives are limited and do not reflect the realities of all of our listeners.
This podcast will feature guests with expertise around conscious parenting who differ in race, class, abilities, sexual orientation, and histories from us to broaden the conversation and reflect the lives of as many people as possible. 25% of the proceeds of this podcast will go to creators of color who have been mentors and influences on our work and in our growth as parents.
If you like our show, please subscribe and stay tuned for more conscious parenting advice and insights. And check out our link tree at linktr.ee/yourkidsdontsuck to donate and connect with us.